Stream ESPN 1000 anytime through the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is the home of the best team in baseball as we speak on May 14th. ESPN 1000, the White Sox have a split doubleheader today. First game gets going with a first pitch at 2:10, but of course we will have your pregame coverage starting at 1:30 today. And of course, the second game will occur tonight at 7:10. Yurko, we have two games, seven innings apiece.
Right. Giolito starts the first, Kopech goes with the second.
He does, and I have to say that it's been a nice little unexpected surprise to have these Michael Kopech starts pop up every now and again, like a nice little treat for White Sox fans. Like, hey, your season's going great, but oh, by the way, things are going to be even better in a few years when Michael Kopech actually enters the rotation on a normal basis. So that will be a fun thing on tap for tonight. And the man who will set the scene for you is Connor McKnight. You hear him for every pre- and post-game show. And occasionally, you also hear him doing some play-by-play when Len Casper has television duties. But, Yurko, more importantly,
yes,
we hear Connor do the
Thursdays
segment that is sweeping the nation. Everybody yes is a huge fan.
At 11:30, Thursdays.
McKnight at the movies. That is the huge
segment, kid,
that everybody seems to love right now. Connor, how do you feel about this overwhelming success that you're having on the Carmen and Yurko show?
Fantastic. You know, this is the this is what you dream of, right? I mean, you sign on with a new company, you come into a new place, you want to be accepted as a coworker, as a friend, but most of all, you want to have a hit segment that's based around doing play-by-play on classic cinema. That's the dream. I mean, that's just the dream.
It pays well, doesn't it?
And the next level, yeah, the next level on the podcast is you describing adult films.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
I've been working out the lexicon for different actions, different setups, all that kind of stuff. I wish there were more scenes that started without a pizza guy. You know, it's a little
well, there's always the one
repetitive,
with,
I guess,
with the plumber. You know, it always happens that way. I can't wait till you do the apple pie scene from American Pie.
You know, so here's the behind the curtain, right? Just lift the screen a little bit. I 3 weeks in or something, I was having trouble thinking of a scene to do. I was like, I'm not really sure, you know, exactly where I want to go. So I emailed Randy and I emailed Jeff and I was like, hey guys, you know, any suggestions? You know, that'd be great. I'm just kind of running into a roadblock here. And both of them immediately sent back that scene in the email. And I was like, wow, that is aggressive. That is a real
thing.
He's
a young man straddling a pie.
We just wanted to know what you were dealing with, Connor.
Could be apple. Could be strudel. Not entirely sure. Oh, that's apple. Oh, yeah. No, it's apple. It's everywhere now. Yeah, it's going to be weird.
Should we continue on with this line of questioning, Yurko? Could we get to the White Sox?
Let's get to the White Sox.
Right. I wasn't sure how far we wanted
team
to go.
They're the best team in baseball. Why not?
Yes, yes. And so my premise, Connor, on May 14th, it is early. We all know that in a baseball season. But at this point, you'd be hard-pressed to find too many reasons to be upset if you're a White Sox fan. And I'm trying to remember the last time something lived up to the expectations the way these White Sox have to this point. Anything come to mind to you immediately?
You know, I think across town, you know, this 16 run, that mattered. You know, I know White Sox fans are loath to make comparisons, and they should be. You know, it's your crosstown rival. You don't have to. But getting paid to watch baseball like this, I think that matters. You know, 15 was a heck of a run for them. They got absolutely smoked by the Mets in four games in that NL Central, and then everybody thought, oh, there it is. Here we go. This is next. You know, a Dodgers team or two, the 2020 Dodgers, I think matters just a little bit in recent history. But I think what makes this White Sox team stand out so interestingly to me is that you lost Eloy Jimenez. You lost Luis Robert. It was a guy that could have won MVP and a guy that did win Gold Glove, respectively. And they are still one of the best offenses in baseball by several measures. The guy that you non-tendered and brought back has been your staff ace. And the guy who has, you know, in his last three starts, pitched incredibly well, maybe the best in his career, is the guy with all the prospect status. And the guy going in game one today, Lucas Giolito, who is your ace, is having the roughest go and still you would take him to start probably game one of the playoffs if you had to tomorrow. I think the White Sox still have, and Sox fans still have a whole lot of trust in Lucas. They're doing it. They're paying off this promise in ways that we didn't expect, which makes it, for me, even more fun.
Yeah, I would agree completely with that assessment, Connor. Now, although the one point is, at what point, though, do you start to be concerned with the way Lucas Giolito is pitching? Because there, I think we all gave him a pass for the Patriots Day game against the Red Sox because it was an oddity. But and then you try and make it, you make the excuse, look, he was left out there a little too long in the game. Was it the Tigers where he, you know, 117 pitches or whatever it was?
Yeah, so, Nico Goodrum got him. I think that's right.
So, you know, you can kind of talk about it and say, and then he goes out and pitches ho-hum against the Royals. But what do you need to see from him where you actually, because I'm still a little concerned. I guess the changeup has not been as effective as it was early in the season and last year. And so I guess I'm wondering if the league has maybe caught up a little bit with his approach.
Yeah, I think the strategy against Lucas has changed to the point where he has to now change back. But if the question, and it's kind of, you know, sitting on the changeup and maybe pouncing on one that stays up in the zone and doesn't have that dead fish fade on it, you know, kind of hitting the changeup that's got something hittable attached to it. But I don't worry about Lucas until August. Yeah, mm-hmm. I really don't. And the reason I wouldn't say that about other guys, I would say that about Lucas, is because Lucas has found the depths of Major League Baseball. He has been the worst starter in the American League and rebuilt himself from that into the guy we saw in 2019, the guy we saw in 2020. And that matters to me when I'm evaluating a pitcher. That matters to me when I'm looking at a guy's skill set, because if he has understood already what it is to kind of rebuild himself, you know, go completely, you know, bionic man all over the place, better, faster, stronger, we have the technology, he can do it again. A guy who has that kind of performance over the last 2 years doesn't just evaporate. If this is a season where he has to bounce around and work on things and maybe work that slider in or discover that curveball again, that's okay. Because I think I've been proven that, or it's been proven to me that Lucas and Ethan Katz and the rest of the Sox pitching infrastructure has the ability to reset him to a certain degree. I don't really worry about Lucas, truly, especially with the way everybody else is pitching at this point.
Now, the name of the game is always pitching, and when they're pitching as well as the White Sox are right now, you're going to win a lot of baseball games. But I'll also say, looking at the lineup with all the injuries, without Eloy and without Luis Robert in there, it certainly is not as daunting. And then when you take your, you know, you give your mean Mercedes a day off from time to time because you want to get other players in the lineup, maybe you want to get Jose Abreu off his feet, all of a sudden, when you look at a lineup that maybe has, you know, Billy Hamilton, Leury García, you know, you toss in, you know, a Danny Mendick.
It's a juggernaut.
You know, and Jake Lamb. How long can the White Sox continue to get away with the lack of impact bats in the lineup, do you think? Or are you not concerned because of the way they're pitching? Do you think, you know what, no concerns, because as long, I guess you got the best run differential in baseball, so until something actually happens, you can't really make any judgments.
Well, I think the Cleveland Indians have shown you over the last couple of years that if you pitch well and play defense, you can keep yourself in it, bottom line, right? But pitching is pitching, and pitching can get hurt in this game. That's why every team walks into spring training and goes, yes, I would like 7 or 8 more healthy arms to just throw 95. I don't necessarily care if they know where the strike zone is. I just need them. I want the arms. I expect that the White Sox are still in a mode where they'd like to add offensively. You know, you mentioned the guys that are producing right now, and you know, Danny Mendick getting called up, all those kind of depth moves. Those are important, and it's important to have that depth. But offense is crucial. You know, I mean, you got to have guys who are dangerous in at-bats. You've got to have guys who can, you know, be foundations for you. And the reality is that Eloy and Robert are not likely to come back for a while. And even with them there, the White Sox would be looking to add if they were on top of or at the top of, near the top of the division. I don't think that should change just because you've gotten, you know, some solid at-bats. And you have gotten some solid at-bats from Billy Hamilton over the last couple of days. Or just because you've gotten, you know, kind of some bounce back stuff from Leury García, or because Yermín Mercedes has shown himself to be a player, you can still go at. And you know, I think the White Sox, I think anybody at the top of the division feeling the injuries that the Sox have had, or injuries like the Sox have had, would go add somebody. I think it's okay to feel good about where the Sox are and know and expect that there's probably something coming on the way as well.
In the 80s, Bruce Sutter would give you that six-out save, maybe even that nine-out save every once in a while. This is 2021. How many five-out saves can you expect out of Liam Hendricks during this year? And should you be somewhat cautious with doing that too many times?
If you ask Liam, 95 more five-out saves, right? I mean,
right.
He just wants to go out there and pitch and do it. They have been hesitant to throw him out there for long outings, outs-wise or innings-wise, I guess. They have not been hesitant to leave him out there for a good number of pitches. Liam Hendricks is a tough guy for me to know because like a lot of people, when he was on the A's and, you know, they threw him for 50-something pitches and then said, we're going to bring him back for game three, I thought, great, bring him back for game three. The White Sox will beat the hell out of him in the seventh and the eighth inning, put up a couple of runs, and that's a series win for the White Sox. They get to move on in advance. I was wrong. Liam Hendricks is that kind of guy. He can go that deep. I would like to see him pitch more often. I would like to see him used a little bit in maybe some different and more earlier spots when the leverage dictates it. But the way this White Sox bullpen is kind of set up, you've got guys who are pitching really well and can handle that in Bummer and Crochet and Cody Hoyer needs to figure some things out, I guess, a little bit, but you should be able to trust him later on as well. I'm for throwing Liam Hendricks more often. I get, and it's really convenient, too, for Tony La Russa that he's got other guys that can cover up some of those spots as well.
This is going to be a difficult question, Connor, but who are you more bullish on, as we get you out of here, who are you more bullish on as a contributor for the White Sox in their lineup throughout the remainder of the season? Would it be someone like Yermín Mercedes or Andrew Vaughn, who seems to have come around a bit at the plate lately?
Yeah, I think...
bigger impact.
I guess it would probably be Vaughn, only because the upshot for him should be higher, right? I mean, he was regarded across baseball as a top-tier, can't-miss, advanced bat out of college. You know, it's tough for me to throw that aside only because it took him 20-something games to hit a first home run. His plate appearances are disciplined, and only in, you know, some really tough at-bats does he get outside himself and swing at stuff. It's Shane Bieber, right? I mean, Shane Bieber got him. He aced him. I think Yermín can be a solid contributor throughout. I love the fact that he has a two-strike approach and knows what to do with the baseball. The pinch hit yesterday was, I mean, that's pro-level stuff. But I guess if you're really asking, like, okay, who's that impact guy, the guy that could step up to a point where your trade target, once you get to the deadline, doesn't have to be a top-tier guy. Maybe it's more of a middle-tier guy on the market. I guess it would have to be Vaughn's contributions that allow you to set the sights just a little bit differently at the deadline, if that's what we're talking about long-term.
Hey, Connor, I got a suggestion for you, by the way. This is Randy.
Hey, Randy.
For McKnight at the Movies.
Mm-hmm.
Can we please get the Warriors in at some point over the next couple months?
Because he doesn't know what the Warriors is.
He knows what the Warriors is.
I do know what the war. I've never seen it, but I know the whole come out to play thing and how that was, you know, not scripted and whatnot. I know its place in movie lore. I haven't watched it yet, and I feel like I should probably sit down and watch the film get the whole piece de resistance of it into my body before I do the play by play. I would feel cheap if I didn't.
Okay.
Yes. Work watching the Warriors in between all your play by play duties and pre and post game before the baseball season ends.
We got a little time
Connor.
In between game one and game two.
Yeah.
You
got to
sit down with Len and DJ and watch.
Kill
the
some time. By the way, Connor, what were you born? 86, 87?
85.
85. Yeah. Good year for the Bears. The Warriors released in 1979. So
sure.
Forgive
sure.
him.
But, you know, I've seen like Jaws and Star Wars and stuff, right? Like,
sure.
I get it. I should
other classics like the Warriors. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
No doubt about it. All right, it's Connor McKnight. Check him out on the pregame starting at 1:30 today here on ESP 1000. Thanks, Connor.
See you, fellas.
All right, Connor.
You love the Warriors, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, big fan of the Warriors.
JR, I know JR liked it.
Huge fan.
Listen, I watched it several times. I enjoy it. I just, you know, sometimes you have to understand the age gap that happens. And, you know, when you're born, you know, 7 years after a film is made, sometimes they kind of fall through the cracks.
Not only that, but those guys in the Yankees uniforms, they could run forever.
And wasn't
bat furious, man. They were lethal.
I'm trying to remember too. Wasn't there like a roller skate gang or something?
Yeah.
They're
in the subway.
I haven't seen it in probably 20 years.
And then do you guys know who the lady was that would come on to give the updates on the radio? Hey, you big boppers out there.
She passed away recently, right?
She was the Carmen Sandiego.
Yes.
Where
yes.
in the world was Carmen San Diego? She was the lady that was on that.
Well, Carmen is in New Orleans.
Hey, you big boppers out there. We failed and, you know, wherever they were at. Yeah. Ah, it's good stuff.
Interesting movie. Have to go back for a rewatch and check that one out.
Well, it's on every once in a while on, you know, the Showtimes. You can find it on the Skinamax.
All right. You're familiar with load management?
That I am.
You are, Yurko.
You bet I am.
Is it coming to the NFL? We'll discuss next.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko
on Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000. Don't miss a minute of Carmen and Yurko. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
The NFL embarks on its first 17-game schedule this season, and the question now is being bandied about, Yurko.
Yep.
Will the NFL follow the NBA's lead and begin load managing for key players?
Well, you want your best players on the field most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you want them playing as close to 100% as they possibly can be. So load management for players, hasn't that already happened over the course of time? Reggie White, when he'd go 6-7 straight plays, would be taken off the field. So he can get two plays, get himself a rest, get him back on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that that's already happened. There's always been a rotation within the interior three because players get tired. If you're giving full energy on 5-6 straight plays, you've got to rest. Akeem Hicks coming off the field.
Sure.
Khalil Mack coming off the field.
Absolutely.
Getting a rest, you know. It, always start them in the series, but at some point they're going to need a rest if they go too many snaps in a row.
Yeah.
So I think out of necessity you've seen load management in the NFL. I don't ever think I'd tell DeAndre Hopkins that you can't go out there on a play.
Now, what you're talking about, I completely agree with the way you're looking at it. However, it was brought up and get up by a multiple Super Bowl winner in Teddy Bruschi. He brought up the idea of teams actually sitting players out for games. I'll let you hear what he had to say first, and then we'll discuss.
You know how teams value their divisional games and how important and critical they can be to winning that division, especially if it's tight. So with there being now an extra game in a 17-game regular season, do general managers and head coaches start to load manage their players so they're 100% healthy for a stretch run? I mean, in terms of the Washington football team, I mean, they play the Raiders late before they get into that divisional stretch. I mean, is there a certain player that could use an extra week of rest? I mean, is there a team, for another example, that has a 4-game lead in the division and you want to save him? I mean, these type of things now I think will start to be talked about. I mean, is there a Sunday, Thursday, a stretch of a games where it's so tight and they look at it and it's like, man, this is a brutal stretch right here and we've got player X that's not feeling so well, so we got 17 of them now. Do we take him out of this game to make sure he's healthy? Those type of conversations in terms of load management in the NFL. I know this is usually an NBA thing and a basketball thing, but now they can start to enter the conversation possibly.
Pure silliness. Absolutely pure silliness. Might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'm going to tell you why.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, you can't guarantee an individual is going to be there for the final 5 games of the season because you might rest him for 2 games, and then all of a sudden he gets hurt in the next one, and all of a sudden you don't have him anyway. It doesn't make a difference. If a player is injured, don't play him. You've got to have a deep squad.
Yep.
Don't play a player if he's injured. The only way you can work, and it's rep management, it's repetitions. How many reps does a guy usually play during a game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a guy plays 80% of the reps, you got the other guys playing 20% of the reps. I was load management guy. I was there to go ahead and rest other guys.
Mm-hmm.
I only played about 38% of the downs in my career because down and distance dictate who plays when, where, why, and how. You're never taking Kyle Fuller off the field when he was a Bear here when he was playing well. You're starting corners. Your corners always play.
Yeah.
Your receivers always play.
Mm-hmm.
Your 5 offensive linemen play all the time.
Yes.
100% of the snaps, your 5 offensive linemen play. There is no load management for that position.
They're healthy, they're out
there. Right. If you're injured, you don't play. If you're not injured, you go out there and play. Not only that, 17 games, how many division games do you have? Used to be eight.
Six now.
Now it's six. It's less important than it is than it's ever been. It's less important to control your division. If you go 3-3 in your division, you could still win your division. It's not a problem. When there were eight games and you went 4-4, well, it could be a little bit more problematic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go 7-1 or 8-0 in your division. Guess what? You go 2-6 the other eight games, and you were still in the playoffs at 10-6.
Sure.
So it was more important back then. It's less important now to control the division. So what are we talking about? Less important now. You cited one of the reasons why, because of divisional games. That's a bunch of hooey. It's crap. It's less now than it's ever been, 6 out of 17. If a player is injured, he's injured. You don't rest somebody for the final five because there's no guarantee he'll be there for the final five. Okay? Silliness. And you've already got load management in the NFL. It's called reps. How many reps does an individual get during the game? Reggie White would always get rest during a game. Khalil Mack gets rest during a game. Your best players will get rest for a game because you can't go 12 reps in a row and think you're going to be fantastic.
And to that point as well, if you look across the league, just look at, and this is this goes plays right into the Carmen and Yurko theory premise, do not draft running backs, do not pay running backs. You look at how often running backs, now every team has multiple running backs that they use. That is a that you can classify that under load management these days. You know, you go back to the 90s when Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith were running rampant across the league.
Right.
They were each getting over 300 carries per season, and rightfully so. That's the NFL that they lived in.
Eddie
and that
George
was,
had close to 400.
Nowadays, outside of Derrick Henry, that really doesn't exist.
Right. McCaffrey, too, but McCaffrey got hurt.
Yes.
With his pass receptions and with his rushes,
yes.
He had 2,400-plus yards, and then he got hurt the next year.
But those guys are completely outliers in this NFL.
Yes.
So the premise that teams would actually consider sitting a key player during a game if they were healthy and ready to go, I think to your point, it's different. If they're injured and it's to the point where it's affecting their ability to run or move on the field, okay, but that's not anything
that's not a new concept.
It wouldn't fall under load management. That would just be a guy who's inactive for that game because he can't physically go. It's not a new thing that's going to all of a sudden happen because there's a 17th game.
Right. There's no such thing as load management in the NFL, period. There's been rep management forever.
Sure.
And you pointed out the running back position. You don't take your best players off the field offensively. And sometimes you do. Devontae Adams gets beat up, and guess what? He puts his hand on his helmet and he comes off.
Yeah.
When guys need a rest, they'll tell you, I'm exhausted, I can't run anymore. Hand on the helmet, they come off the game. So I think it's a silly concept. I think what happened there in Bristol is they met in the morning and said, somebody's got to sell this crap. Well, we're going to try to sell with load management. We want to call it something that's like the NBA. It's crap. It's absolute garbage.
I think it's also a reaction to the fact that they looked at the NFC East schedule and they saw that, as we pointed out yesterday, the Eagles and the Washington football team both have way too many division games at the back end of the
five to six.
So they said, you know what? Is this going to lead to load management? The reality is no, it's not. It's no team is going to start making decisions.
I just pulled up the percentage, right? So it used to be 50% of your games were division games.
Yep.
Half of them were division games. Now it's 35%.
There you go. One third.
It's less important than it was before. Now, because it's less important, and this is divided by 17.
Can we add, too, it's less important, too, when you add in that now there's an additional playoff team in the mix as well.
That's right.
You know, you don't have to win your division to make the playoffs.
Well,
certainly,
you don't have to go 6-0 in your division to make playoffs.
Yes, there's plenty of ways to get in.
You could be 3-3, and you could still make the playoffs within your own division. Plus, I'm going to save him for this game. When was that in baseball? Remember? When they arrested a starter.
Steven Strasburg.
Yeah. No, they arrested a starter to use him later. It was the Chicago Cubs.
Was it Zambrano?
Yes.
It was against the Diamondbacks.
Yes. The dumbest thing I ever heard of back then.
The LDS.
We're going to arrest him for this game. We're going to pull him, and we're going to arrest him for that. That game never came.
Was it game three, and they decided?
It was the first game. Was a tie game 1-1.
Yeah.
And he took him out after the sixth inning.
Yeah. They were the same for game four.
I think Carlos Marmol was he still on the team at that point?
I can't remember.
And he came in and ended up blowing the game.
Right.
And then afterwards they asked Lou, and he said, I wanted to save him for game four.
Yeah. Game four never came, though.
Exactly.
That's the point.
They got swept.
It never came. So you can't save somebody for something
sure.
that if they end up getting hurt, no. You play them until they can't play. Then if they're injured, you got to rest them. You've got no choice. And the minute they're healthy, you're back in the game. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I will say that, like,
I
say
mean,
for
the
instance,
crap that comes out of Bristol sometimes.
Say, for instance, you've got a huge game coming up and you're playing a crap team and you're up 14-0. You might be like, hey, let's start giving so-and-so less reps.
No, 14-0 is in the NFL, Merck. Get out of here. Like, you saw 35-0. Come back. Bills, okay. Bills Oilers.
That was 31-3.
Come on. That was 31-3. 35, they put 35 on them.
Right.
Come back.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just saying, like, if you start, you get two touchdowns up and you got to start managing guys.
Wait a minute. You watched the Super Bowl with the Atlanta Falcons and the New England Patriots. Were you not watching that game?
They're playoff games. I'm talking about a regular season game.
It doesn't make a difference what kind of game it is. I'm telling you, that's what happened. The Tennessee Titans went up on the Kansas City Chiefs. How'd that work for them? 24-0. What happened? The Chiefs put 50 burger up on them after that. There is no lead that is sacred in the NFL.
I'm with, like, if you're up by 50 and you're in the second half and you want to start resting guys, okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but like, 14, Merck, that was a little low is all I'm saying.
Here's the king. You know who the king of load management was? And we're past the break. When we come back, I'll tell you who the king of load management is.
There you go. That's a tease, folks.
This is Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Talking about the 17th game this year in the NFL, the Bears' 17th game will be against the Las Vegas Raiders. That's their additional game this year. A lot of folks are making their plans to head out to Vegas. We were talking a little bit about that, but that also led to a discussion about load management spurred on by Teddy Bruschi and Get Up this morning.
Silliness.
And we both think that the idea of NFL actually adopting that policy seems remote at best because, look, there's 17, each game is precious. And so, and as you pointed out, Yurko, you never know if you're going to have your guy for the next game anyway. So all of a sudden sitting him for a game you think you're going to win could end up in a catastrophe and a lot of second guessing if you go on to lose that game. But you teased us with the king of load management before we went to break.
It's not like people haven't thought about, I want my players to be the most effective on the field and rested when they're on the field. Sam Wyche.
Yes.
Coach of the Cincinnati Bengals was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
He took the Bengals to the Super Bowl, and he actually had the Bengals running well for a while, and they actually lost to Joe Montana back when he was the head coach.
That they did, Tim Crumry, with the ugly injury in that Super Bowl. So he was in the early 90s. I was with Green Bay. We went down there and played. He kept 10 offensive linemen active. One of them was the kid out of St. Francis de Sales that played down at Miami, Florida. Mike Sullivan was his name.
Okay.
So he was down in Tampa with them. Another kid was Tim Ryan that played with my brother at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 offensive linemen, and then they come out and they go to me, and I played against Sullivan. He goes, we kept 10 active. He goes, at some point, he goes, we're going to bring another 5 out, a fresh 5.
This was in a regular season
game? In a regular season game. They brought out 5 fresh offensive linemen that were, you know, like 8 plays into a drive.
Yes.
They took their offensive line out, put 5 fresh offensive linemen in, and the party was going to begin because we're going to be exhausted. Now, we rotate it all the time.
Sure.
So we're always staying fresh. You know, you play 4, you get a couple pass rushes in, he'll substitute some guys out.
Nowadays, you get 7, maybe 8 active offensive?
7, 8, because you got to have your linebackers, you got to have your special teams that you're thinking about.
So most teams have 7 or 8 active linemen on game day.
And it's not like he tried it forever. He tried it once, twice to see how it worked.
And it wasn't.
Realized it wasn't worth his while.
It didn't revolutionize the NFL.
It's not like stupid thoughts haven't been had before. It's not like coaches sit around and go, you know, I'm going to try this. This is going to be groundbreaking. Most of them end up just to be stupid thoughts.
I love that, though. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But can you imagine, too, if that had actually caught on, if it was effective, and all of a sudden now you have every team going to 10 active offensive linemen?
I don't even know if they keep 9 on a roster sometimes.
No, it's really, right. With the practice squad, maybe you have a few guys there. But
that's kind of been over the course of time. What do you keep? How many do you keep active? Defensive backs are important because they help on special teams. Linebackers are the same way. Running backs, sometimes it's 5, sometimes it's 4. But it's always special teams that are thought of.
Absolutely, and that's why we've had the conversation about whether or not the Bears will actually have 3 active quarterbacks on their game day roster because of Justin Fields, Nick Foles, and Andy Dalton. Alfredo is in Waukegan, and he has a thought about load management. Hey, Alfredo.
Alfredo. Alfredo.
That build up, he was so excited talking.
Fettuccine Alfredo.
What was his thought, Mark? Can you summarize what it was he?
Yeah, I mean, he was in favor of teams potentially doing more load management.
I would have to hear a more compelling argument as to why. Yeah. Like, who are you load managing? Because let's be honest.
You're not load managing the quarterback, right?
No.
If your quarterback's injured, you're not going to play him, so there's no load management. Allen Robinson is going to get a load management if he's healthy?
Of course not.
Why would you be taking Allen Robinson off the field? You're not.
No.
Right? So the other receiver, number 11.
Mooney. Darnell Mooney.
Mooney. Are you going to take him off the field?
No,
he's one of your top two receivers. He's never coming off the
field. Not to mention, I mean, listen, love what we saw from Darnell Mooney. He's one season into his career, and what has he really proven? That he, you know, what would you load manage for Darnell Mooney? And especially when you consider the younger players. Oh, Alfredo is back. He can explain it to us.
All right, Alfredo, let me know.
I misunderstood what he was saying. He doesn't like
Okay, all right, Merkin misrepresented you, Alfredo. What do you got?
Sorry about that. I was saying that I heard a Fettuccine Alfredo and then my phone cut off. So what I wanted to bring on was, I think load management in the NBA is a thing because of the fact that games are played, you know, one day, the next day, you know, two games in 3 days, three games in 4 days, you know, not a lot of practice in between.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that in the NFL you get, you know, in essence, you get a week off in between. So I think load management in the NFL is already a thing, like you guys were talking about earlier. But the way it's done in the NFL is you constantly hear, you know, we had a player take 2 days off of practice, take 3 days, or they just had practice off and whatnot.
Sure.
So no, it's already a thing in the NFL?
Yeah, no, you're right. That's a good point, Alfredo. It's already with the way veterans practice.
Veteran days.
Yeah, it reflects it in practice, not in the actual game. And when you have a 17-game season, you're not going to let a game go by and not have one of your best players on the field. It's just not a thing.
I would offer that the reps that individuals get, that's the management that you get over the course of time.
Yeah.
That's happened forever. That's not something that's new.
Do you think, Yerk, that too much was made about the idea of the additional wear and tear that NFL players will have to go on in their career? And you jumped me there, but I will, the way I looked at it is, look, what's the average career of your NFL player?
4 years.
Less than, though, even,
three,
right?
Three and change,
so
probably.
The truth is that for the vast majority of players, you're talking an extra 3 or 4 games over the course of the entirety of their career.
Right.
That is not going to make any tangible difference whatever long-term injuries they suffer.
I mean, take a look at the New England Patriots that play in the playoffs every single year.
Bingo.
They're playing more games than anybody else has.
And
you look at the New York Jets in the last 10 years or the last 8 years.
Sure.
Since Garcia left them,
mm-hmm.
their quarterback, they haven't been in the playoffs. They haven't even been close.
Mark Sanchez.
Thank you. Mark Sanchez. They haven't even been close to being in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not playing any extra games at all. Meanwhile, New England never, you hear New England crying about, oh, we're in the playoffs, we're so much more tired than everybody else, we've played so many more games. No. They got rid of a preseason game, which was a junk game. They mm-hmm. could get rid of another one and play 18 regular season games. Would I want to see an increase in the amount of players on a roster? Sure, why not? Not just practice squad guys.
Yes.
Because I know they want to play practice squad guys. They don't want to pay them anything anymore.
Yeah.
Right, so I would want a game day roster of 50 players,
mm-hmm. and yes,
you know, 50 players, and then you can start with an active roster of 54, and you've got to deactivate 4 guys before the start of the game.
Completely, that's something that would seem to be in the NFLPA's best interest.
And with the increase, yes, I agree. And with the increase of the second game, now you become 16 to 20. And now the NFL say, whoa. There's not really an increase. I want a subsequent increase in the salary cap. So if you had, it's a 12.5% increase, if I'm not, 1/8. I want a 12.5% increase in the salary cap. to go ahead and absorb the extra costs that are going to be there for you.
Makes sense to
and
me.
And if they don't like it, too bad.
And I would think the additional revenue that
they are generating additional revenue with doubling of things.
Exactly. Yes. And that's the critical point, is that for the vast majority of players who have a, you know, lifespan of whatever it is, 3.6 years in their NFL career, that additional game check will be more than lucrative for them to offset the additional game that they have to play each and every year. I'm Jeff Meller in for Carmen today on the Carmen and Yurko Show. Up next, we have a bonus play from Mike North, and we will get you set for a weekend of Hall of Fame ceremonies. I'll tell you about that next.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Get Carmen and Yurko podcasts on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
I'd like you to meet a real inspiration.
Carmen and Yurko, ESPN 1000.
White Sox have a twin bill today, split doubleheader. First game begins with a 2:10 first pitch. Coverage begins on ESPN 1000 at 1:30, and they will have the second game at 7:10, which means that the Odds Couple podcast will be available for you on the ESPN Chicago app very soon today. And with Carmen in New Orleans, I guess Randy Merkin's going to be riding sidecar with Mike North today.
Yes. And you know what? It'll be good because, you know, Carm has all these statistics he likes to bring up. You know, 33% of the time, this team, we're going to get down.
He's a numbers guy.
He's a numbers guy. No, he's a numbers guy. Best.
We're just going to get you right into the action. Right, Narthy?
Oh, absolutely. Are you guys kidding me? What's up, Jeff? What's up, Yerks? What's going on?
Oh, just enjoying it, kid. Enjoying the White Sox. Making money on the Sox, kid.
Every single night making money on the White Sox. Are you kidding me? They're getting it done, putting it down. Tim Anderson, the most underrated player in the league, probably. You go on the street and you ask somebody, you know, in another city, hey, how about that Tim Anderson? And, I mean, this guy led the league in hitting, and they go, ooh. So absolutely great start for the White Sox. And everybody was worried about Minnesota. It's Cleveland you got to worry about. They're only one game back, but they're 13-3, their last 16. So we'll see about that. But I digress. It's time to pick another winner after we had one last week.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Davies, oh, my God, 3-2. Tough ball game. We took the under in that one when it looked like they were going to give up a ton before the game, but it's baseball. The wind was blowing in. Same thing is going to happen tonight, only in a different locale. Last night you had the Reds and the Colorado Rockies combining for 21 runs. You had the Reds getting it done. Colorado comes up. There was a ton of runs scored in that game. It's the over-under with Miley going against Marquez is 10.5. The first reaction, it's you got to take the over. You got to take the over. That's not the read I got, guys. I have Colorado as the winner tonight with Marquez, who's given up 13 runs in his last 10 innings against Miley. I have Colorado and the under tonight. And you can buy the run line if you want. You'll get a good price on it. But it's a pick. It's a pick it right now. So, you know, you don't even have to buy the run line if you don't want to. Maybe there won't be a decent price for it. Just take the pick in Colorado and take the under 10.5.
There you go.
Under.
There's your bonus play from Mike North. Check out the Odds Couple on the podcast. It'll be up there very soon for you on the ESPN Chicago app. Thanks, Northy.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, Mikey. Go White Sox.
All right, Yurk. You mentioned the White Sox. You know what? Let's take a quick call before we get into this Hall of Fame. Mike in Hinsdale had a White Sox thought. Hey, Mike, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We're doing well.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, so I heard you guys talking with Connor earlier about, you know, offensive depth, especially in the outfield. Even when Engel comes back, they're going to need some help. One guy I think they should look at is Corey Dickerson from Miami. Miami's really going nowhere. Yep. He's a free agent after the season. He's hitting over 300 this year. I know it's only like 110 at bats, but he can give them some depth in the outfield, some power from the left side of the plate, and I believe he can also play first base if need be.
Sure. I will say this, though, Mike. I don't think first base will ever be a need because you also, if you wanted to shift things around, if you needed Abreu to get off his feet, I think Andrew Vaughn slides over to first base fairly nicely, especially if you have someone like Corey Dickerson. You know, you'd maintain him in the outfield, I would imagine. Dickerson's a lefty, so that's the one thing where I look at and say, you know, he's okay. You probably wouldn't have to give up nearly as much, but when I look at, like, players that I would like to see the White Sox add. Someone like Starling Marte, who's also on the Marlins. If they become sellers, that is a legit all-star center fielder who could be a game changer for the White Sox lineup if they wanted to trade for him. Now, he would cost a bit more than Corey Dickerson,
sure
Mike.
He would.
But at the same time, I think he might make more of an impact if you were to acquire an outfielder.
I don't know if you've seen who's been playing center a little bit for the Chicago Cubs.
Chris Bryant?
Yes. Now, he'd look really good. Really good on the south side, wouldn't he?
Listen, if you can add Chris Bryant to the White Sox lineup, it would certainly
I'll take your injured Eloy Jimenez.
Of course you will. Of course you
will. And one night in Kopech.
Yeah, I'm going to pass if I'm Rick Hahn on that offer, but thanks. Thanks for the offer. I'll pass. I'm going to hold on to Michael Kopech.
I'm being as nice as I can.
I'm going to hold on to Eloy Jimenez. If maybe Blake Rutherford intrigues you.
How about Vaughn?
No.
Would you give me Vaughn?
I would not. Because
if Vaughn wouldn't be doing anything on this team right now if both guys were healthy.
Yerk, I think we're in a day and age in baseball where I don't think any team is giving up their top hitting prospect when they've got 6 years of control for just, you know, a half a season of Chris Bryant. I just think we're past that point in baseball where most front offices don't want to give up that service time.
World Series aren't important anymore? Well, especially for the White Sox. Service time is very important, and the budget is always in the utmost concern.
Listen, if you want to ask me what's the best for this baseball team this year, it would be better to have Chris Bryant on the team.
Long-term,
though, as a White Sox fan, I don't want them trading away Andrew Vaughn. Not for one season of Chris Bryant.
Well, what do you anticipate giving up for people if you want to get somebody? If, say, both Eloy and Robert can't make it back. What do you think?
That is a longer conversation. I don't want to run out of time here.
Okay.
We'll get into that on Monday, I'm sure, when Carmen returns.
I'm like, wow.
Hall of Fame thoughts.
You're going to give a
Hall of Fame. Basketballer or the inductees for the Rock and Roll. What are you more interested in?
I think the Rock and Roll.
Real quick. Tina Turner, Carole King, yes. The Go-Go's, Jay-Z, yeah. Foo Fighters,
fantastic.
And your boy Todd Rundgren.
Todd Rundgren, who should have been in a long time ago, but he's
just like Jerry Krause. He won't honor the Hall of Fame until Warren Zevon gets in.
Well, no, that's not true. I think Zevon eventually does belong, but I'm not going to argue about it one way or the other. The Go-Go's fantastic. I'm glad they got in.
Tina Turner, she's just getting in now?
In the performer category.
Oh,
I think she's in.
Okay.
She's already in with Ike.
She's a legend.
There you go. Thank you. Yes.
Her and Ike are in.
We turn to JR for all
Big
our
wheel.
All our Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and musical.
And I know
expertise.
You'll be watching the basketball stuff, I know.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Yerk. You know that. All right. Stick around. We've got White Sox pregame coverage up at 12:30. Greeny is up. 1:30, I'm sorry. Greeny's up next.
Carmen and Yurko present today's final word.
Because you had to be a big shot, didn't you? You had to open up your mouth.
Today's final word.
You had to have the last word.
On Carmen and Yurko.
And you've already got load management in the NFL. It's called reps. How many reps does an individual get during the game? Reggie White would always get rest during a game. Khalil Mack gets rest during a game. Your best players will get rest for a game because you can't go 12 reps in a row and think you're going to be fantastic.
That was the final word on Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.